My name is Carrie Ginger and your host of the Biteable podcast, Know Better, Live Best. Today's guest is Trad Cotter, a microbiologist, professional mycologist, and organic gardener who has been collecting native fungi in the Southeast and cultivating both commercially and experimentally for more than 22 years. Listen as we discuss Mushroom Mountain, which he owns and operates with his wife, Olga, to explore applications in various industries, including food production, micro-remediation of environmental pollutants, and natural alternatives to chemical pesticides. Know Better, Live Best is dedicated to supporting food and health literacy in people of all ages. Our mission is to cut through the misinformation surrounding food, health, and nutrition, because we believe that when people know better, they can make the right choices and live their best lives. We are presented by Biteable Foods. They use blockchain and Internet of Things technology to build traceable, transparent food systems, because it shouldn't take an investigative journalist to find out where food comes from.
Hi, I'm here with Trad Cotter from Mushroom Mountain. Hi, Trad, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I appreciate you coming on the podcast today. I know you've been busy and you actually just finished with a tour, didn't you?
We do. We do tours for adults and we do tours for children of all ages. So,
and I can't imagine how fascinating that is and what they walk away with from there. So can you go ahead and introduce yourself and kind of tell us how you got the passion for mushrooms?
Sure. Yeah. I actually loved being in the woods when I was young. I was, you know, a fisherman or fisher boy. And then one day I just started looking at fungi in the woods. And when I was in college, my mom said, hey, there's a mushroom farm out, you know, near Charleston, South Carolina. You should go check it out and go on a tour. And right after the tour, the owner came up to me and said, do you want a job? I mean, it was that easy. And then he put me in charge of the fruiting rooms. And then I just began to become interested in all the wild fungi. And then it was like learning one at a time. I just knew that it was just really an underexplored kingdom. So I don't know how you can't be fascinated by that, because there wasn't a lot of information out there. So it was easy to kind of, dig in and really become interested.
How old did you say you were when this all started? Like when your mom took you to the farm?
Well, I was 20. I was 20 years old. Yeah.
I think it's fascinating to think of how your path in life changed just from your mom giving you a little interest in taking you to learn something new. It's really interesting that was out there.
Oh, yeah. And when I walked into the fruiting room at the farm, I've never seen mushrooms grow. I didn't really eat mushrooms at all. I mean, I really didn't. And after I left that, I just felt like I was bitten by the bug, you know, and saw these mushrooms in a foggy environment. It was like something out of a movie. And I just wanted to be a part of that, you know? And years later, it's, you know, here we are running this big company and doing all this cool research. I just feel really lucky that my mom told me to go to that farm that day.
You know? Absolutely. I think we're all pretty lucky, especially as we get into the podcast, everything that you're doing. We're very fortunate that she did take you that day when you were 20. So Mushroom Mountain is pretty fascinating. I was on your site for quite a while, and there was one mushroom that came to mind and kind of sparked my interest, and I'm going to say the name wrong. So I'm going to start at Lion's Mane. I'm going to let you finish the name of that one. And what was interesting, I do like seafood, and you said that it tastes like lobster.
Right. So it's a very soft, delicate mushroom. You know, some mushrooms have gills underneath, these little blades, like portobello and oyster. And this one has soft, really soft cascading teeth and or spines, and it pulls apart just like the tissue of like crab meat and lobster. So it's got a wonderful texture, but when you cook it with butter and onions and garlic, it tastes exactly like lobster and crab meat. But one of the most important things about it is recently they're finding that just by eating that mushroom is that it has what's called a nerve growth factor in it that helps regenerate adult brain stem cells. So it's being used with Parkinson's patients, Alzheimer's, ALS, all kinds of medical, like neurological conditions. So it's an amazing mushroom, and it's really good to eat.
How common is that to come by, that type of mushroom?
Okay, so lion's mane mushrooms or pom-poms are predominantly on the east and east coast. There are some west coast species, but like right now they're like everywhere on the east coast with The drop in temperature and the rain in typically October, November, December, you can go out and find one if you wanted to, because they're really easy to ID. They're a large white like ball that grows up on trees with these little white soft spines on them. So they're one of the easiest mushrooms to identify, and they taste amazing, and they'll come back in that spot every year until those trees are in decline. So they're really good.
Wow. So there's got to be other types of mushrooms that have different textures and tastes. Do you want to tell us about a few of your favorite?
Well, I have a favorite for each season because I can't pick on just one. It's like picking children, you know? Lion's mane is pretty good. Maitake or hen of the woods is another one that's getting ready to fruit in the fall. That's one of my favorites. It's a very meaty mushroom, and a lot of people don't like mushrooms because they say that they don't like their texture. But this is a good meaty, kind of a drier texture, and people make jerky out of it. You can saute it and use it as a main protein, like as a dish on a plate. And just by itself, it's just a really good mushroom that you don't have to add a lot of seasonings to. So that should tell you that just on its own, it's really good. In the spring, obviously, it's going to be morels. Morels are these very short, pitted mushrooms. They almost look like a honeycomb all over the top. And they only fruit 3 weeks out of the whole year in any one given spot. So you have to pick one that has kind of a limited fruiting window. And then those we cook with butter and heavy cream, basil, and some shredded cheese and a couple drops of vanilla, and it is amazing. It is like candy. And then in the summer we have chanterelles. You know, that's my season. So we've got chanterelles. In a given day I can go out and pick 40, 50, 60 pounds in our area. It's very plentiful, and it's peppery with a fruity apricot aroma, and it goes great by itself or on cream dishes, on toasts, pasta, just about anything.
The only one I've actually was familiar with what you said was the morel mushroom. I hear a lot of people go hunting during those couple weeks that you talk about for those mushrooms. And we had a neighbor, we tried to cook it and we didn't do it justice, apparently. I thought it was delicious. But our neighbors got a hold of us and sent us over the right way to cook it. It should taste even better than the way we cooked it.
Yeah, they're amazing. And it's one of the most recognizable mushrooms, and they're really easy to ID. I encourage anybody to listen to try to go out, join a club and learn how to ID mushrooms, because there's a lot of good food out there, you know, and that was kind of what changed my life, is just being out in the woods.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to switch gears a bit, and I'm really excited to hear what you have to say about this, just the medical benefits and the research that's out there. So can you go into some detail about the medicinal benefits of mushrooms and how they might differ among different species?
Sure. And for those who are listening, you know, mushrooms are related, well, they're fungi, just like penicillin is fungi. So mushrooms contain a lot of natural antibiotics, which benefit our immune systems. And to me, they're better than these very fractioned and target-specific antibiotics that contain like almost like a cocktail of different things. So they're very good for our immune system. And almost all mushrooms contain some type of natural antibiotics. So those are consumable. So when you do eat those, you get the benefit of just getting these natural small doses of a natural antibiotic, which also helps prevent drug-resistant bacteria from forming. So that's good. Mushrooms also contain compounds that will lower your cholesterol. Since they're a high-protein, fat-free, cholesterol-free food, and also the only non-animal source of vitamin D, that also makes them a really good choice as a clean protein source for vegetarians and vegans, and also meat eaters too, who just want a very clean, ethically raised protein too. Antibiotics, we got antivirals. Mushrooms also get viruses too, and they defend themselves by creating their own antiviral compounds. And by cooking mushrooms or making extracts, we can also benefit from those natural antivirals that are in these mushrooms to help us prevent flus and things like that during a flu season. We've talked about lion's mane and the neurological. Cancer is the last one. I think that there's a lot of mushrooms that signal our immune system, our helper T cells, and our cascade system to help identify and attack different cancer cells. And a lot of mushrooms do that. Oyster mushrooms are good, shiitake, maitake. The research is just beginning. So there's over 4,000 mushrooms in my area. There's 5 million species of fungi estimated on the island, on the planet right now. And there's just so much to learn. And this is just the beginning.
I get really excited anytime I hear that you can benefit your health just through food. I think it's really important that people out there hear that may try to use food as medicine. We're coming up on flu season right now. For the average person out there that may not have a ton of knowledge about mushrooms, do you have any ways to help them maybe, or where they should start if they want to buy mushrooms for their health or cook them?
That's a good question, because during my tours, I tell people flu season's coming up. So shiitake and oyster mushrooms are some of the best for antivirals right now, because they're plentiful. They're available. You might find a local grower, or you might find them in your grocery store, and so are shiitake mushrooms. But if you can just slice those up, and what you want to do is cook your mushrooms first before you add them to anything, because that helps unlock the medicinal compounds. It's what's called bioavailability. I mean, just dropping them in a hot soup may not be enough, but if you saute them a little bit till they're soft and then put them in a soup, then some of those antivirals will come up. And if you make a mushroom soup maybe 2 or 3 times a week, a nice little broth, and that could keep you much healthier during the flu season, for sure.
And I think it's an easy way to take advantage of that and to be proactive with the coming up, because we're all so busy and you want to stay on top of your health. And mushrooms are delicious. I've loved them since I was a little kid. So I think it's something easy I can go out and do for myself, and hopefully even get my children on board with that. That might take a little more off to find some good recipes to get.
Yeah, and so many of us take, we think about taking medicine after we get sick, and it's what we call maintenance dosing. And maintenance just means, you know, you know what makes you feel better. So why not just take it in smaller doses, you know, when the season just, you know, right before it arrives, as a preventative. So maintenance, preventative, about the same thing.
So even just a couple times a week, eating the mushrooms can benefit your health. Is that what I heard you say? You said drop them in soup or things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, just, you don't have to eat mushrooms all the time, because people ask me on the tour, you must eat mushrooms all the time. And I said, well, I don't. I could, but number one, I might get bored of them. But number two, it's really not good to eat the same thing all the time. You know, you need, your body has to adjust to different things, and, you know, having your body have target practice on some organisms or pathogens for, you know, every now and then. And my philosophy is, like, it's okay to get sick. You know, mild sickness is perfectly fine and actually good for you. It's chronic or acute illness, which is troublesome. So, yeah, you need to allow yourself kind of these ups and downs, and you battle through that, and your immune system gets better. So,
absolutely. And you brought up a good point earlier, too, how when I asked about your favorite mushroom, you eat them by season as well. And that's probably important with maybe the vitamins in the mushroom. If it's in season, I would assume it's tastier and maybe better for you.
Yeah, that too. And then you're not just eating a mushroom. You might be picking up some other organisms that are growing with it or around it. Even some seasonal foods too. So you get like this old biodiversity that almost those prebiotics and things that are going in. You know, you're not sterilizing your mushrooms. So you're getting all this background of different organisms that are hitchhiking along the way. And, you know, the mushroom is not sterile. So by cooking those up, you're making everything bioavailable again. So,
absolutely. And you were talking a little bit about some of the research that was out there and how it's kind of just begun, like the research and all the benefits out there. Is there any other research you want to touch on?
As far as medicinal properties?
Yes.
Right now, there's an interesting one done with, it's a little fungus called a bird's nest fungus. And we are trying to grow that one. We've had some success cloning it. It's a little tiny, little fluted little fungus that grows in the mulch. I bet you if anyone listening has mulch around their house, if they went out there, they'd probably find it. It's called a bird's nest, and it's only about a millimeter or two wide and tall. and they are finding that it is highly active against pancreatic cancer cells, which is a big deal. So we've been trying to find a way to how to grow it so we can make extracts out of it and make some kind of a liquid medicine or therapy. And again, that's coming out of Israel, the University of Haifa. Dr. Solomon Wasser is doing the research, but nobody's really looked at consumer products for it. So we feel like we grow all these other things, but nobody's really figured out a way to grow this tiny, tiny little thing that nobody really cares about. You know, it grows in the mulch, but we are, because we know people might need it. And well, we know people need it, but it may never be commercially available unless it's a pharmaceutical fraction drug. So being so small, we're trying to figure out how to grow that so we can put it into liquid, so patients can take that as a preventative, as a maintenance dose too. Because you know, after when you've been diagnosed with pancreatic, there's very little anyone can do unless you catch it really super early. But there's hardly any symptoms. So as a preventative, bird's nest seems to be one of the most exciting fungi that I've seen. And that research is just about 2 years old. It's fairly new.
There's sort of a lot of knowledge that's going to come out of this, and hopefully ways to help those people with pancreatic cancer. Because we tend not to think about cancer until maybe it's become a problem for us or someone close to us. And it's just keep these reminders of these are different types of food you can just add into your diet to hopefully help prevent some of those things from happening.
Yep. And I spoke with some cancer researchers several years ago. And they asked me, they said, do you know what the number one cause of cancer is? And I was like, I don't know, exposure to some, you know, they said diet, you know, they said diet, obesity and diet. Because they said, you know, extra weight, it all fuels sugar and diet. They said that is the one of the main triggers and sustainers, you know, it fuels cancer cells. So by readdressing your diet while you are asymptomatic or while you are healthy, it's never too late to, you know, eat good, clean foods, eat organic, and also eat mushrooms along the way.
And you wouldn't imagine your energy levels you'll have and how good you feel until you actually feed your body that type of fuel. It's like a whole new person.
Oh yeah. And there's mushrooms for energy too. You know, there's cordyceps mushrooms. That's an amazing one. We just started growing that. It's a tiny little thread-like orange mushroom or fungus that grows out of larvae or caterpillars. It's really tiny. And I mean, if you were walking along a trail, you wouldn't think anything of it, but it contains one of the most potent compounds that's, it's also a good antiviral, but it's also good for increasing oxygen and blood flow and energy creation in your cells. So this one could potentially replace like caffeine and coffee or like energy drinks and Red Bull, stuff like that. These compounds create more energy. They don't give your body a false sense of energy like caffeine does. These actually pump out more ATP out of your cells. So they create more energy out of your cells, which is different. So there's no crash. So
the cordyceps mushroom, is that what you called it?
Cordyceps, yeah.
So how easy is that to find? I mean, I'm a kindergarten teacher. I have three small children. Like, this sounds like I need this.
Yeah, you probably won't find too many. So that's one of those kind of like the bird's nest fungi where it's, yeah, you're going to find some, but we're just making an effort to try to grow these in mass indoors so we can harvest them. And then we actually blend them in alcohol and water. So it takes the medicinal compounds out. And then it concentrates it. It's almost like taking a concentrate. And that's kind of where we had to go with some of the species. And honestly, it's better because you're getting all the compounds out in solution. So we do have a cordyceps tincture that we offer because it's fairly rare in the wild. You'd find one or two here and there along the Appalachian Mountains. But it's easier to grow it indoors and in these little jars and stuff like that for us. Yeah, we don't have to wander for hours.
Right. How much attention do most mushrooms need from you? I just keep hearing you talk about growing your mushrooms and everything you're doing. How, I mean, is this something you can just, I'm not even plant, but then walk away from?
If you are, there's indoor growing and outdoor growing. So outdoor cultivation is fairly easy. For like shiitake logs, you would like drill and plug your logs, fresh cut logs, and then leave them there for 6 to 8 months. And then you would water them like maybe once a week. And they wouldn't even die. If you didn't water them for 6 months, they wouldn't be dead because they can live up to a year without one drop of water. So they're very resilient. But if you water them once a week or if it rains once a week, and then after 8 months, they're just going to pop out and they're going to fruit whenever it rains, or you can trigger them to water. So outdoor ones are fairly easy. And then there's wood chip ones that King Stropharia goes in wood chips. I mean, you just sprinkle it into the wood chips and you're done. You know, that one's easy. And you can grow that one around your yard. You can plant that one around your school, you know, in the playground, in the wood chips, and they would probably be popping up around the perimeter wherever it's shady. And they're edible and they're safe, you know, so they're not going to hurt anybody, especially if someone dares someone to eat one, you know. That would never happen, right?
No, no, never.
No. So, but the outdoors easy. Indoors, I mean, then it's seasonal outdoors, but indoors it's constant because our indoor fruiting room is just, it's like a perfect place, you know. It's like Disneyland for mushrooms. They just go nuts. And there's foggers, there's light, the temperature's perfect, it's cool all the time. And we have to pick twice a day in there, every single day, twice a day. Because mushrooms in there double or triple in size every day, wow. Literally by the hour. So for a homeowner to grow indoors, I mean, you could grow some indoors and then just grow it in small quantities. There's some oyster mushrooms you can try. That would be easy. And I like to grow oyster mushrooms indoors, like in buckets. And my first recommendation, especially with kids in schools, is to learn how to recycle debris into mushrooms, like paper and cardboard and spent coffee grounds. And you can fill a bucket and they'll just fruit right out of the top of the bucket. That's pretty easy. That doesn't take very long. And it's a great learning tool too. So yeah, you don't need a whole lot, just humidity, a little bit of light and some temperature. Yeah.
Well, you never know who's interested in a spark either to go into the mushroom world like you. And my husband and I are planning to do some indoor growing. And so I hadn't thought of mushrooms, honestly.
Yeah. And again, they're fast, and that's what makes them, you know, that's what makes them interesting. And, but once you grow a couple of those, you probably just won't stop because then you'll see, oh man, that was easy. So let's just scale it up a little bit. And the next thing you know, you have, you know, like me, 50,000 square feet of warehouse space, you know, what are you going to do? But I've had some fun on the road with, teaching oyster mushrooms to like at Mother Earth fairs and things like that. To adults. And then I'd come back a year later to the same cities. And then their son, this guy's son came up to me. He's all mad at me. And he goes, thanks a lot, man. I'm like, what? He goes, my dad took your class last year. When I came back from college, my whole room was empty and it turned into a fruiting room. And I was like, oh, that's cool. He goes, really? And I said, well, you may want to go back to school. So it works. Yeah, I mean, some people just want to fruit a little bit, and some people just, they realize, hey, this is cool. I'll just take it to the next level, and then I'll find a little happy place, you know, whether it's one bucket or 50 buckets or 50,000, you know, so.
As it sounds like it can quickly spread, and you just need to stay on top of, and what might work for you in your household if you choose to embark on this endeavor, which I think sounds great. I love mushrooms. I love adding it to anything I cook. I don't branch out very much.
Yeah, no, I would say start with one bucket, and I have, you know, my book, Organic Mushroom Farming. It's got that in there, and it's got, you know, hey, start with this, and here's a little, maybe a little design that'll fit in the closet or a 4x4 space. Just, you know, just to start growing 5 to 10 pounds of mushrooms a week, which is a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah, you can share it, trade it with neighbors, you know.
Well, it's perfect because it sounds like you have it broken down to make it kind of foolproof, hopefully, for people like me that it's new to.
I don't know. I mean, I try. People still mess up.
It'll happen, and I may, but, you know, I'm resilient. I'll keep trying. Because I think it's worth it. I love mushrooms, not just for the health benefits. I just love the taste.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to back up because I'm not sure if you were touching on this, but when you were talking about the mushrooms and with like some paper, like the school project, does that kind of touch on the micro-remediation? And this is something I need a lot of knowledge about because I'd like you to go into what that is.
Yeah, so micro-remediation is how it's the fungal form of bioremediation. And mushrooms are different than bacterial remediation in that mushrooms produce heat, carbon dioxide, and they sweat during as part of their metabolism. It's like an animal turned inside out. Not quite, but you know what I mean? It's like, but they swim through their sweat and they sweat and they swim through it. And in that sweat are enzymes and antibiotics and different things. And that's what they use to break down their environment and then absorb it right through their cell walls. But they also sweat things like antibiotics and enzymes to break down things they don't normally break down. And that usually happens when they run out of food, when they get desperate. So degrading environmental pollutants like toxic molecules, that's done with its enzymes. So they have very nonspecific enzymes that just, like keys. I would say that I have 5 keys that open my office door, my car, my house, my building, and something else. But like some mushrooms have a skeleton key, you know, those are the enzymes that can just blast apart a lot of different things. And oyster mushrooms have that type of skeleton key. That makes them very versatile. And one of the things we do here is try to find and culture mushrooms that have those specific abilities. Some are very specific. They might only have one key, but what if that one key was a plastic bag? You know, that would be a huge thing. And we've had mushrooms turned in that we've been growing on resin and treated lumber, bowling balls, plastic mailboxes. You know, I have a saying, you know, build it and they will come, you know, from the movie Field of Dreams, build it and they will come. If we build it, mushrooms will show up. You just have to kind of be there to catch them in the act. And we can culture those mushrooms and then test them to see what they can do to break down specific things. Molecular degradation is different than biological. And biological is like mycofiltration or remediation of contaminated, like biological contamination. So that's mostly what I'm doing now, is trying to create biological filters using fungi. Which would be like a wood chip and sand mixture. So water can flow through it, but the mushrooms knit together like a micron network through the sand. So the water flows, but the bacteria get trapped in the sand because the fungi have like this filter set up, like this three-dimensional filter. And what's cool about that is that the fungi are self-healing. So if the filter is ever cracked or it breaks, the fungi will net itself, weld itself back together and you know, fix the hole. So if you try to flow water through it again, then it's good for filtering out bacteria. And I just think they're amazing.
I am amazed at everything these mushrooms can do. Even just going back to the plastic bag, there's some mushrooms that can break down plastic.
They're starting to. They found fungi that can use polyurethane as its sole carbon source. You know, it'll eat nothing but polyurethane. It doesn't eat any other nutrient in the lab. So that being one of the components of plastic is very intriguing. So they could even potentially try to create new plastics that these fungi could break down. And that may be the better strategy than trying to find a fungus that's not able to break down what we've made. So I think we're going to see that plastics, well, we know plastics are a huge problem on land and especially in our oceans, that, you know, there are fungi that are probably out there eating it right now. We just need to find them. We need to isolate them and put them to work. And it's just a matter of time, you know, that we're going to figure this out.
And I know it's easier said than done, but it's fascinating to know there's types of mushrooms out there that can just benefit the earth in more ways than what I imagined. I never thought of mushrooms as helping out maybe the planet or with pollution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's so much going into landfills. A lot of the oyster mushrooms, like I was saying earlier about growing oyster mushrooms in your house. You know, if you have a bucket and you start sorting just your household items, you're making a difference. And if everyone could, you know, do that, when you go home, you would look like, oh, well, there's a cereal box. There's a little box that the butter thing came in, or here's newspapers or shredded things and old clothing. I mean, mushrooms will eat all that. And so when I do shows, I tell people that, you know, you should be sorting your compost, and you can sort your plastics, your metal, and then you can have a bin just for mushrooms. You know, everybody should have a mushroom recycling bin, because mushrooms, a lot of the stuff, 30 to 40% of household waste mushrooms can eat, and 60 to 80% of schools and businesses mushrooms can eat, and fruit. So that's a big number, and that's a big number to keep out of the landfill. But, you know, I know not everyone's going to do it, but, you know, I'll try. I'll try to tell as many people as you can. And the best groups to tell are students and kids. You know, I lecture kids all the time, and they really get it. And, you know, they go home and tell mom and dad. And when they're out shopping with mom and dad, they're like, hey, you know, if they see mom picking out the styrofoam egg carton, and little Susie says, no, mommy, I need the cardboard one, because the mushrooms will grow on that. And then now you have a generational learning vertical of, you know, of knowledge that, oh, hey, we have this little mushroom, a live mushroom bucket that doesn't smell. It smells sweet. And you just add this stuff to it, and it eats it and fruits, you know, edible mushrooms in a couple of weeks. I mean, that's pretty cool. And I wish that upon you.
I'm intrigued by this, because we do compost at our home, and we do recycle things out and what we can put in the compost. But this is something else I know my husband will be absolutely on board for to try out. It's not far from what we're already doing. And you totally hit it on the head there with going after the children to talk with their parents. Because I did a small unit on composting last year with my kindergartners, and I had quite a few emails that came home and said, so apparently we're composting at our home now. They went home and talked with their parents about that. So more we can be done. So going back to your site, I know it's Mushroom Mountain began in 1996. It doesn't seem that long ago, but here we are about 20 years later, and it was said to be the farm of the future. Do you still believe that to be true?
Oh, yeah, I do. Oh, yeah. And I feel like we've, even 5 years ago, we were teaching sustainability, and we were, felt like we were, you know, on the edge of just growing mushrooms on different things. And then it just all blew up in our face in a good way. So, 5 years ago, we bought this new location and just took a chance, and we just found some things moving along in the lab. And, if I was to get in a time machine and go back 5 years ago, I would be like, I would have to nudge myself and say, look out, you know, or run. if you want some time off, run. I'm just like, I never would have saw my book becoming a huge, like a bestseller the way it is. And it still is. And you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I ordered bacteria, you know, pathogens for my birthday, you know, and Olga's like, what do you want for your birthday? And I said, I don't know. She goes, well, just buy what you want, and I'm going to wrap it up for you. And so I ordered like salmonella, E. coli, staph, strep throat cultures, pneumonial cultures. Like it was just like it was like a big biohazard box. And she was like, what is this? And I was like, happy birthday, you know? And she was like, I don't even know what you're doing. And, you know, what did you need it for? And I was like, well, something happened in the lab, and I noticed that some mushrooms were attacking specific other fungi. And I was like, well, why can't we just do it with bacteria? So I started with those cultures I got, and started making little gladiator matches and things, and watching them, because, you know, we didn't have cable, so you got to do something. We're in the country. And so we started noticing, like, hey, these things can make, you know, novel antibiotics. It was like, boom, you know, blow out the back of the mind. It was just like, this is, you know, can't get any better than that. And then, you know, a year later, we're out looking for mushrooms, you know, and, you know, the antibiotics alone is still, we're still studying that because it's pretty intense. That's an amazing field where we could potentially take bacteria or biopsies from a patient and turn around a novel antibiotic in 24 to 48 hours. I mean, that doesn't exist. But that's something that we've conceived here, and that's something that we keep chasing down the rabbit hole. And, you know, we keep our work very secretive for a lot of different reasons, but that's a big one. And then a few years ago, Olga and I are out mushroom hunting, and we find, you know, a cordyceps, you know, one of those fungi that grow out of insects, but we find it growing out of a huge carpenter ant, you know, and I mean, we found it. We were amazed we found it. We didn't think of anything of it at the time. And a couple months later, you know, we're walking around the yard and we see fire ants. And I'm like, oh, hey, I wonder if that works on fire ants. So we cultured it and we dumped it on the fire ant mound. And sure enough, in 24 to 48 hours, those fire ants were gone. And we're like, well, maybe it was just a coincidence, you know, not a good data point, right? One mound. So we started doing tests and testing it on our property and our fields here. And we found it. I mean, it works amazing. And that fungus hasn't been found since 1907. And we were just happened to find it in the woods. It's just little instances like that, that I feel like, 1996, a farmer of the future. All I was thinking about was a mushroom farm with a cool trail around it, you know, and, you know, we started Mushroom Mountain in a 4x6 walk-in closet, and then we moved two more times, and we're up to 50,000 square feet. And we're not even touching the 50,000 right now. We're in 8,000. But, you know, when people come here and they see, like, you know, like the tour was here today, I said, I'm just going to warn you. I was like, this is not just a mushroom farm. You know, I think a lot of people come here just to see mushrooms grow. I said, but we do a lot more than that. And everyone always walking out says, oh man, this is amazing. I had no idea mushrooms could do these things. And that's kind of how I think, 20 years later, started out really slow. And now it's just, it's like completely vertical, you know? It's like, I've never ridden on a bull at a rodeo, but it kind of feels like that. Just trying to hold on for dear life, because there's so many directions we can go. And we had one employee 2 years ago, and now we have 9. And we have this wonderful place that we're trying to create into like a campus. So I think along the way, the business idea of having a mushroom farm and having a passion for it seemed like a dream job. And now it's like not even a fantasy anymore. It's like, we've built this thing up, and now it's just branched into this beautiful, you know, mushroom that has all these different like departments and silos that we could hire people in who have an interest and a passion too. So not only are we fulfilling our passion, but we're able to fulfill the passion of others who are seeking it too, that are attracted to this. So we're, like developing this, like just a dream team, just a family of employees and friends that work here to explore, you know, micro-remediation. We have someone in charge of that division, and then I'm in charge of the medical stuff and the pesticide things, and Olga and I run the company, and she runs the farm. Like, I mean, an amazing woman. And I'm not here that much, so I'm out lecturing and doing all these different things, and a lot has changed. I mean, in 1996, I was probably lecturing for, you know, a garden club, and there was probably 4 people there, and half of them were asleep drinking champagne and eating pound cake. And I got paid in pound cake. So that's cool. But I wasn't complaining. You know, I if there's one person in the room and they're interested in fungi, I'm just going to turn their ear and let them know all the cool things that they do. And you know, we're a company that makes things that people need, not what they want. And I think when you wake up in the morning and you think about the solutions first and not the economics of things, then they happen and the economics come after, you know, or during and with. So I never really think about the money or the economics of things because I'm interested in creating solutions and also helping people broadly across the world, you know, with food and filtering water. You know, we're not filtering water for our neighbors here. You know, we're trying to create those filters for, you know, Haiti and Yemen and things like that. Those are money makers for us, but it does push the science along, which is, that's good. And yeah, we need to understand how that filtration works, because maybe we can put those near hog farms and chicken farms here, you know, around industry, or maybe even dog parks. You know, those are terrible. The runoff from dog parks are a problem. So it's all tied together. But when we always think about the need and not the want, those things seem to rise to the top. And that's why this place, yeah, the farm of the future, 20 years later, I wonder what it's going to be like 20 years from now, you know?
I'm amazed because just in our talk tonight, my energy level, I mean, I teach kindergarten, I have three small children. I'm going to, you know, be a little tired, but I'm like, oh, mushrooms could give me energy. We have a carpenter ant problem in our house. Oh, maybe there's a fix for that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was isolated on a carpenter ant. It should work. Yeah. But I mean, if there's one thing that's happened in 20 years, it's just like, you know, maybe I was like more naive back in 5 years ago. Oh, we found this ants, you know, maybe we could commercialize it and sell it. It's not that easy. You know, the business side of this is very complicated. And, but you learn it along the way. I mean, you learn how to talk to attorneys, you learn how to talk to the EPA, the FDA, and then you start to navigate all this stuff. And, definitely grew up, you know, 20 years ago, it was just, hey, I want to grow mushrooms. And, you know, everybody was telling me, no, you might want to get a real job, you know? I mean, that's for real. And so I did get other jobs, but along the way, eventually Olga and I met and just started Mushroom Mountain, and we went full time. Yeah. And it seems to be working out.
And people who make the biggest change, really, do they take those risks because they're passionate about something and they want to make that change? And if your why is that big, you're going to follow through the way you and Olga did. And look at where you are now.
Right. And that's to be said. I read a lot of business journals and I fly around a lot and I'm trying to learn from other CEOs, you know, who have made big things from small things. And they say that, you know, big companies can't start out of a garage anymore. And I disagree. I totally disagree. I think if you have an idea and a passion for it and find an angle or even create a market, that's an even better one. If it doesn't exist and you create it, I mean, what are you going to do? Invent another phone? I mean, that's been done. I mean, they have that market. But if you're able to find an angle on something, that's huge. But if it's an angle on something that can change the world, like target-specific pesticides and antibiotics, you know, that's a big deal. That's a crazy deal, because I can't imagine a world that has, you know, not all these fertilizers and insecticides when you go into the farm, and then you have a natural biological, you know, organism of a yard, and then you go to the hospital and they take a little sample and they're like, hey, you know, come back tomorrow and you'll get your little, you know, patient specific antibiotic that the mushroom made, you know, out of the little container. That's the fantasy, but most fantasies around here come true. So yesterday, science fiction, right? You know, Star Trek, people are talking on their little watch things and people are like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, what's ridiculous. So
talking about my watch earlier today,
nothing's impossible.
It's nothing. Not. And just the benefits, just the medicinal benefit and the food and how it can really change our health. Why do you think consumers should care where their food or medicine comes from?
Well, it's about what's put into it too. You know, there's, you know, a lot of shady stuff on the market. You know, I think that also you support local industry, and food loses a lot of value, nutritional value in transit and time on the shelf. So support your local farmers, your farmer's market. You know, even after the farmer's market is over, please, like, I mean, there's farmers that still have stuff in the field. Somebody was just asking me, after the market, I mean, do you just stop growing? I was like, no, we grow year round. They're like, can we come out to your farm? I'm like, absolutely. You know, if more people connect with their farmers, and there's more of a network, then, that could be a better food system for us too, rather than ordering it in or frozen or processed food. No way. No way. Full of things and preservatives and dyes that can make you ill. But yeah, the mushroom stuff and I would say food co-ops. And if you hear this and you can't find mushrooms at the market, maybe you should start it, right? I think you are. But you're going to send me a picture of like one of your family's rooms full of buckets, and I'll get in trouble again next year. So.
Oh my gosh, that's probably going to happen here. My husband already has a plan. We moved and we're remodeling our entire home, but we have a decent sized pantry that we made a pantry because we want to use it as like our growing room. So I think we're going to add buckets in there too.
Yeah, and I think that the whole where does your food come from is, it's important. And not only that is, I mean, look at that. When somebody buys from us, look what they're supporting, you know? We're not a huge factory farm. I mean, all the things like the innovations that we're working on, I mean, it's a family owned business, and we're putting a lot of our own money and energy into like these solutions that are they're going to potentially help us globally. And there's other farmers doing stuff like this, you know, and just supporting them and knowing traceability and what your farmer doesn't or does spray, would help you. Because I mean, what good is food, you say, oh, fresh food, that's healthy, but then you're going to buy it, then it's sprayed. I mean, what's the point? I was like, you just poisoned perfectly good, healthy food. So having that traceability back and trying to get to know your farmers and the source, and a lot of farmers will let you come out to their farm and look around and say, hey, you know, complete transparency. I think, you know, all this labeling and stuff, I think is a good idea. And, if anybody says not to label, you kind of have to raise an eyebrow and wonder why. We're not going to go political, but.
Or if they don't want you at your farm. But it's true. Most farmers do want you out on their farm because they're proud to show you the work that they're doing, mm-hmm. and the food they're growing. I 100% agree. And I liked your advice earlier about connecting with your farmer, even when the farmer's markets are over. We've heard a lot about, you know, support your local farmer, but I haven't heard that as much. It's a great piece of advice for the general public to get to know some farmers and keep in touch with them.
Yeah. And take your kids to the farms too. I think that's important. Especially in urban environments, don't really know where the food is coming from. I think it's coming from a box or a plastic bag, but to really see it and to meet farmers and to really understand and then teaching the kids, how to farm and, how to plant seeds and care for things. That seems to be something that's not taught through an iPhone, you know?
Right. It's true. And it's just better for one's health to get out in nature and get dirty.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what is your hope for the future of agriculture? So you have a lot of big dreams that you're currently making a reality in your line of work.
The future of agriculture. Oh my gosh. Well, obviously I hope that we're a part of this, but trying to eliminate chemical pesticides would be one of the, even if it's a small contribution, we would like to be a part of that. And I really see a world. I have a 5-year-old daughter now, and I don't want her to grow up the way we did, you know, with all these chemicals and everything. I see biological farming systems, you know, community gardens, you know, there's hydroponics, there's all these ways of reducing water consumption, because water is going to become the next big one. Phosphate, peak phosphate's coming. So we're studying mycorrhizae, so how to put fungi on the roots of plants so you don't have to fertilize them so much. And that, you know, that's a big, big deal. And I believe that education is one of the most important things for the future of agriculture, is that we need to start educating people from middle school upwards, because the teaching standards are missing about how fungi are, how soil is non-living, essentially, in 4th or 5th grade. So that's the national teaching standard. So I think if things change as far as education, and I really feel like I think countries need to take the initiative to make recycling and composting mandatory, and for companies and consumers to kind of own up to that. Unfortunately, it's going to come to that, where we need completely biodegradable packaging. Soil is a big deal. Depleting soil is directly linked to decline in agriculture and the ability to hold water. So I'm big on soil creation and all these things. So the future of agriculture would be that we grow mushrooms in space. And right now we have some of our cultures up at the International Space Station right now.
Really?
And I hope that one day that I get a call from SpaceX saying, we need you, that we want to try to figure out how to close the loop here. And listen, if they don't call me, then I'm going to build a completely enclosed lunar module up in my 50,000 square feet and just start it up there. Because again, I don't wait around for anybody. If we put in the effort first and show that we can do some things, you might get a call like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I have high hopes for the future of agriculture. I really, really do. And but it all starts with the little backyard gardens, the community gardens, your local farmers, and just supporting that. Yeah, supporting that industry.
Absolutely, I agree. And I hope you do get that phone call. I heard you're a little small, but I think that's amazing. And you have to keep dreaming seeing where it can take next. Because like you said, 20 years ago, you would not have guessed where you're at already now. How far you're still gonna go.
No, and I told Olga, you know, hey, we're going to grow mushrooms on Mars, maybe. And she was like, you're not going to Mars, are you? I was like, no. I was like, but can I just go to the moon? Can I just go to the moon and back? Just, you know, like a little test run. And I think she was like, okay, the moon's okay. You can go to the moon. The moon feels safer. You know, I can still see us. You know, just like, but it would be a dream. But, you know, that's how you get there. It's just like, you know, I'm sure a lot of people dream and, you know, that's just how you get things done.
So you dream, but then you take those smaller steps to get you there is what you've been doing. Like you have these big dreams, but you're putting them in place because you're breaking it down and going little by little, and you look where you are now.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on, and they even asked me on the tour today, they're like, man, you got like five different directions. They're like, how do you stay focused? I said, well, they all move along incrementally. Everything goes. And then there's a lot of stuff that we're not working on. And those are just, they're in the incubator, you know, the gears are always turning. Maybe one day I'm like, oh, you know, we'll do this. You know, we figured out how to build living bricks, you know, out of clay and a fungus that has a higher tensile strength than steel. And I'm like, what can we use that for? Maybe disaster relief, you know, it waited in my culture collection for 6 years. And all of a sudden it just popped out. And now that one's in motion. So it's just, that's why it's an interesting place to be. And, you know, Olga and I are just really pleased with where it's at. And, you know, it's a woman-owned company. She owns it. And we both run it. And it's just, it's working really, really well, really smooth. And I'm really excited about the future. Really excited about it.
That's amazing, because I can tell you've only just touched on the mushrooms and everything you're working on. You keep coming up with these comments that I'm like, what are you also doing? And it's fascinating. It's amazing. Do you have any last thoughts you want to leave for the listeners? And then how to find you? So I think this is really important to get the knowledge out there in the education.
All right. So some of the last thoughts, I believe that if you've never really looked at fungi or respected them or been out there, just go out in your yard and look around and see what's there, especially after it rains, after a few days, and just see what's there. But any mushroom growing out of the mulch and dirt and stuff like that, most of them are beneficial. So don't spray them. Don't spray a fungicide and be like, bad mushroom, bad, you know, fungicide. A lot of them are making soil and doing some really good things for the ecology of your yard. But also just take a walk in the woods. It's a great way to get exercise and take a field guide. You can't get sick by touching mushrooms. So you can take a little basket, pick some, and, you know, post some pictures online. You post them at Mushroom Mountain. You know, that's a rare. That's one way to contact us. And through our Facebook page, Mushroom Mountain Farm. But ultimately, I guess what I would ask would just to be to respect the kingdom fungi and also experiment with it. Like I said, If you're listening to this and think, oh man, I love mushrooms. I could maybe eat a couple pounds a week. It's so easy to grow, you know, and all that's in my book too. And just to open up those chapters and learn from that and watch our videos. And once you grow your first mushroom, your life will change. I guarantee you. Once you grow one little mushroom, you're going to say, I did it. And now I want to do it again. But I want to do it more. And then it gets a little crazy. But that's good. If mushrooms drive you crazy, I've done my job.
Well, I'm telling myself and my husband, we're going to grow our mushrooms, and I'm going to send you pictures. I'm holding myself to this. I'm going to make sure I'm going to start it. And my kids are going to go crazy over it. They may not want to eat them yet, but they'll think it's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, and we could do a follow-up about show pictures of your new children, all your little mushroom friends. So
I'm excited.
Cool.
Well, Dred, thank you so much. I am so excited about where you're going with your work and all of the benefits out there for just the general public of what can be. So thanks for all you're doing. I'm glad you entered that mushroom farm when you were 20.
Oh, me too, man. I don't know. It was either the military or grow mushrooms. And so I don't know, either way, but you know, the mushroom decision was a big one. And, again, thank you for having me. Thank you everybody for listening, and, go out there and have some fun with fungi. Okay.
Wow. I will. Thanks, Chad.
All right. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'd like to remind our audience that the views of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of Biteable or of our staff personally. The purpose of the Biteable podcast is to encourage spirited dialogue around topics like food, nutrition, animal and human welfare, and the food system. Part of having an open and spirited dialogue is accepting that others have views that are different than ours and working to understand how their experiences have differed from our own. We encourage all listeners to do their own research on any and all topics discussed during the show. That being said, we hope you enjoyed the podcast, and thanks for listening.